want to lay down a marker right now, right here. I'm going to make it plain and clear. There is no right way to be a mother. There's no one form of motherhood, no one form of parenthood that works or doesn't work. We, the inheritors of a monotheistic culture, we have problems with this. We who want to know the right answer. We say that we like diversity, but we are so quick to judge. I think we judge more often than not because we are defensive about our choices, and defensive because we have been judged about our choices. So it begins this cycle. You're going to judge me? Well, I'm going to judge you. The 108 names of Parvati, one of the incarnations or forms of the great mother goddess of Hinduism, are a reminder that mothers and mothering is a splendid diversity. They have a trident and a monodent and bells. They can be the abode of the universe and cause injury to demons. They never get old. They are old. They wear red and leather and anklets that are melodious. They take the form of a man. They are fierce and sanguine. Mothers, parents, are Bahula, numerous in forms. Say that with me. Bahula. That's your mantra for today. We have all these debates in our culture about what is the right way to parent. You have folks who advocate attachment parenting, or what is sometimes derisively called helicopter parenting. They are always there, ready to swoop in and solve it, or more positively, they are always there for their kids and loving them and being with them. Others are fans of what they call free-range kids, and thus free-range parenting. Let them grow up to be themselves. Don't smother them. Give them choices and opportunities to make mistakes so they can be fully formed adults, or less positively, just let them do whatever. They'll all be fine in the end. I'll tell you that running a church school with both of these types of parents can be a bit of a challenge. Field trips and overnights are a little complicated. Some pack nothing, some pack everything. You can see what's going on. There is wisdom in both approaches and problems with both approaches. But both approaches are parenting. Moms who mom either way are good moms. Dads who dad either way are good dads. We need to embrace the truth of Bahula, numerous of forms. Look, there's obviously forms of parenting that we do not wish to praise. Abuse, neglect, most concretely and obviously. We believe that all people have a mission, have worth, and their own unique gifts, so we can affirm that parenting that squashes creativity or imposes rigid stereotypes is not worthy of our praise. We want folks to be lifelong learners, so we'll reserve our praise for parents who encourage their children to be curious and open-minded. But other than these fairly basic standards, maybe a few others in the same vein, I think we need to let one another off the hook a little more. Admit that what works for you might not work for someone else. Kids are different. Parents are different. Lives are different. So don't judge so much, yourself included. Moms and dads have to be flexible and adaptable. Sometimes your kid is an angel, and sometimes all you can say is, "I love you, stinky face." Lives are different. If you get asked for advice, give it with a gentle voice. If you weren't asked for your opinion, then just don't. Don't give it. Seriously, don't. Even if you are the grandparent, the best friend, the well-meaning acquaintance, if you aren't asked for advice, just don't. Parents today are overwhelmed with advice, most of it contradictory. One new parent of twins, a woman named Ava Nyer, wrote this reflection on the topic of advice. And she was going to compile all of the sleep advice and put it together into one piece of what is all of the advice. So she writes that she went on Amazon and bought all the top books on baby sleep and development. I read through them all, she says, as well as several blogs and sleep websites. I gathered lots of advice, and here it is all put together. You shouldn't sleep train at all before a year, before 6 months, or before 4 months, but if you wait too late, your baby will never be able to sleep without you. College-aged children never need to be nursed, rocked, helped to sleep, so don't worry about any bad habits. Nursing, rocking, singing, swaddling, etc. to sleep are all bad habits and should be stopped immediately. White noise will help them fall asleep. White noise, heartbeat sounds, etc. don't work. Naps should only be taken in the bed, never in a swing, car seat, stroller, or when worn. Letting them sleep in the car seat or swing will damage their skulls. If your baby has trouble falling asleep in the bed, put them in a swing, car seat, stroller, or wear them. Put the baby in a nursery, bed in your room, in your bed. Co-sleeping is the best way to get sleep, except that it can kill your baby, so never ever do it. If your baby doesn't die, you will need to bed share until college. This goes on for six or more paragraphs, all in the same vein. It ends with this line: sleep when the baby sleeps. Clean when the baby cleans. Don't worry. Stress causes your baby stress, and a stressed baby won't sleep. Joseph Heller has nothing on Ava Nyer. Bahula, numerous of forms. Our culture around parenting is out of whack. We're stressed about it, nervous about it, and we blame about it and judge about it. We expect parents to do amazing things, but we provide basically no support to them. No paid parental leave, no quality affordable childcare, too little oversight of products and chemicals. We fetishize parenting as blissful and wonderful when it is that sometimes, but it's also hard and mundane and sometimes gross, all those bodily fluids. We have this narrowness in our culture about what it means to be a mother, to be nurturing and creative and dedicated and to do things in a certain way and to feel a certain way about doing them. This narrowness excludes mothers who feel differently, who do it differently. We are not very good about honoring the role of adoptive mothers, stepmothers, and foster moms, birth moms who don't raise their kids and so forth, although better than we used to be. We're also lousy about the way that we often treat women and men who want to be parents but aren't, for various reasons, chosen and not chosen. I want to thank Winnie for her chalice lighting on this theme, which models how to have a more expansive vision of those who mother in various ways. But the narrowness in our culture about forms of motherhood also carries over into a narrowness about women who are mothers, and to a lesser extent, men who are fathers too. We remain stuck in this ideology, this mythology, that being a mother is not just the most important thing a woman can do, but the only important thing that she ever might do, and that once it is done, once she has become a mother, then all the other parts of her life must fade into the background. This is a theological position, really, a theological ideology. David Roderick was reflecting on this way of telling the story of Mary when he wrote his poem about seeing the Virgin Mary in the office building window. And I should say here that the womenness of Mary is more true in the Protestant Western view of Mary than it is, say, in your Latino, Latina Catholic tradition. There are more variety in some places, but in the version that most of us are familiar with. Compared to Pavarti, Mary comes off pretty impoverished. Instead of 108 names, she gets two. Mary, the mother of Jesus. Although she had many children, not just the one, a little old, the oldest child syndrome going on here. Or the Virgin Mary, even though the word that's translated as virgin really means young woman. I'm not the first feminist to point this out, that the roles allowed to women in traditional Christianity are virgin or mother. Those are the only two options, not possessor of all the missile weapons. Which might be more fun. The polytheistic pantheon allows so many more options. Amazon warrior woman, Gaia earth mother, trickster, adventurer, cultivator, artist. So many ways to create, to grow, to be. Not just virgin and then mother and then you die. Yet this ideology remains with us. I don't like buying greeting cards. I try to find the one with the least text and write my own note. So blank cards, whoever invented blank cards, thumbs up in my book. The sentiments on the written ones are often so trite, and they're just not right, not what I want to say. But some people in my life really like to get greeting cards, and ones particularly for the occasion. So I found myself this week trying to find one and having the same experience that I almost always have. No, that's not right. No, not that one. No, 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 absolutely not. I finally found one that wasn't totally awful, a whole blank page where I could add things, but it had all the words that were required to be had as well. The problem is that so many of them have this, the most important thing in your life, in my life, kind of language. I love my mom. She gave me my religious home, my love of learning, my politics, my love of nature, but we are both independent adults now. And this sort of lifelong enmeshment that's represented in some of these cards does not work for my family. It works for some people great, and that's fine, but not for everybody. Not for everybody. And those of us who don't do things the way that Hallmark cards and 1-800-Flowers and K-Jewelers expect us to should not be made to feel guilty or wrong for living our life the way that works for us. Bahula, numerous of forms. The notion that there's only one way to mother and that being a parent is always the most important thing in your life, no matter how old your children are, has the effect sometimes of infantilizing grown children. Children who have become adults, yet whose main purpose is to bring meaning into their parents' lives. This ideology sometimes essentializes women as mothers and men as fathers too, although less so, that this is all that you are. And this might feel true for the first few years. It might even be true for the first few years. And that's okay. But if it goes on forever and ever, then no one lives to their full potential, not the child nor the parent. We are full persons. All of us. We have a purpose and a mission to our lives, a mission which changes over time because we have different things which we're doing. It might be being a parent for a while. That might be what we're focused on. That's good, but not forever, and not in only one way. What Parvati and Gaia and the other mother gods teach us is that we can be generative and creative and sustaining throughout our lives, not just in our role as parents. The fierce warrior, the planter of seeds, the beginner, the home you can return to, the absence that propels you to new life, the one who grows the food, makes the food, serves the food, the artist, the teacher, the lover of potentiality. These roles, all of them, are roles we can play throughout our lives, parents or not, when our children are young and when they are not. All roles that need to be played sometimes. I've used the word generative a few times, and this is the quality of all the mother goddesses in the various pantheons. They generate things. They make things. They begin things and help them grow. Sometimes the things that they generate are other gods, or nations, or the voluptuous earth itself. We each have within us this generative energy. Do not limit that energy to children, for so much of the world needs regeneration. That's just one place that generative energy is needed. Do not continue to pour all your generative energy into children past the time when they are well generated and ready to live their own life. As Khalil Gibran put it, your children are not your children. They are life's longing for itself. You are the bows from which your children as living arrows are sent forth. But be generative, whoever you are and whatever you choose to nurture into life. Julia Ward Howe, the Unitarian and the founder of Mother's Day, claimed this mothering power to gather people for peace, to say no more to violence. And her vision of motherhood is typically 19th century, stereotypically so, but nonetheless, the sense that our desire to see that the life we begin lives fully, without violence. This desire is at the core of empathy and justice and the desire for a better world. But remember that her call for peace is the origin of this Mother's Day. Oh, it was picked up later and changed and transformed into something else, but that's where it begins. Not buying presents or veneration, not mythology. Work for peace, the generation of a better world. And this power, the power of Parvati and Gaia and all the rest, Pachamama in the Americas, the Norse Frigga, Oya from the Yoruba tradition, and so on and so on, the power of these goddesses, the power to defeat demons, to give birth to new possibilities, to tend to the rivers and the forests, to plant and harvest, to prophesy the future. This power lies in each and every person, regardless of age or gender or station in life. And it is this power, the fierce mama bear, the patient lover of growth, the healer of wounds, the bow that lets loose the arrow of time. It is this power which the world needs, now as much as ever, to become more just, more beautiful, and more fair. So this Mother's Day, remember, there are lots of ways to parent. Don't judge. Being a parent isn't all that a parent is. So don't stop growing. We all must do our part to generate a better world, every one of us. In this spirit, in the spirit of the Mother Goddesses of many names, let us celebrate this day. Let us build a world worthy of the spirit of the Mother which lives in us all. Let us begin today.